into the How Not to Be a Youth Pastor podcast, the greatest podcast in the history of all of
man
them.
Man can.
Is that what you just
Mankind
said?
Mankind is what we're chasing after.
3, 2, welcome everybody to the How Not to Be a Youth Pastor podcast. We are excited to be here. Kyle and Derek, your two favorite youth pastors, back for another episode talking every single week about
mad cow disease.
How not to be youth pastors. Derek's in a mood this morning. I don't know. It must be the fact that he literally put a chocolate bar in his mouth 2 seconds before I hit record. Yep. So the sugar hit quick.
Just like
on
my
this
kids.
One.
Whenever they have sugar, they like literally go.
I thought crazy. Because I said the sugar hit quick.
No!
And you said just like your kids. I was like, your kids also hit quickly?
Yeah, no. We try to teach them not to hit at all as much as possible, anyways.
Well, just because you teach them to not hit does not mean that they don't hit. That's not how that works with small children. They just do it anyway. We are here. Like we've been saying, we are counting down the episodes to when we don't have to be here anymore. It really is it's bittersweet. This is the third to last episode here.
Dang.
It's a bummer, but like Derek and I said when we announced it, we've got some great things up ahead. We've loved it. We are certainly not out of ideas. It's just that
we're out of the good ideas.
It's just that the time that it takes, we want to take that time to dedicate to some other things. And I'm tired of looking at Derek's face. So,
but that's not going to change. So
and everybody,
welcome.
I've heard from so many people, they're tired of looking at the left side of my face and the right side of your face. And,
yeah.
And so they're just done.
Yep.
But it was a good run while it lasted, and we're not going out without a fight.
No.
Today's sponsor of the episode is
Franklin.
Franklin, specifically the pickleball set that that Franklin makes.
Okay, pickleball is so fun, though.
Pickleball is a blast.
I hated it when I was in school.
Really?
But I love it now.
I loved it when I was in school, and then I forgot that it existed for 10 years. And then
and now
it came back as a thing.
Speaking of school, Kyle, it hasn't been a ton of time since we've been out of school because we're, I guess.
Super young.
Yeah, we are super young.
Although, you called yourself a boomer on the last episode.
And
so.
I stand behind it. I definitely felt like it in that conversation. So I'm gonna stretch your mind a little bit, okay? Thinking back to the days in which we had to go to school every single day, 5 days a week. We had to go to the lunch line, type in our 4-digit code, have our hard plastic tray with our little box of milk. There were a few days, though, when you were at school, that you walked into the cafeteria,
yep.
Saw those white expo boards displaying the menu, and you sat there and go, oh, yes, my day just got better. Thinking back, what was your favorite school lunch growing up?
So, going back to our shared days in the North Central University cafeteria.
Can't use college. It's got
to I'm not going to use college.
That's cheating.
I wanted to give a shout out to Chicken Tuesdays.
Yep.
Every Tuesday, the cafeteria had chicken. If I remember correctly, it would alternate. Like
yes,
one week was chicken
nuggets.
And the other week was, what did they do the other week?
Chicken tenders, I thought.
Chicken tenders? Yeah, that's right, because the tenders were better than the nuggets. Mm-hmm. But they were both new. I mean, it was like, it was awesome. Loved it. They also, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe North Central's cafeteria like once a month would do like steak and shrimp or something like that.
Like, it was more than once a month. But yeah, you got like a special ticket. You couldn't go up for seconds. And
yeah.
It was awesome.
It was delicious. But no, I going back to like elementary school days, first of all, and again, we're going to attempt to not get political here, but I do have a politician that I blame for the downfall of my school cafeteria. or politician adjacent, our school cafeteria had the greatest cookies, chocolate chip cookies, on the face of the planet. They were so good. They were gooey and and crunchy at the same time.
Like the outer rim. Yep.
Oh, they were delicious. They were big. It was so good. And then Michelle Obama starts trotting in with her Healthy America bullcrap. And I didn't care what anybody's policies were. But she took away my chocolate chip cookies, and I was so mad. It was one of the more devastating days of my life. But to go all the way back to the actual question that you asked.
Clearly, though, it made an impact because we don't still eat did. The same way.
It did make an impact. We had like square pizza.
Yes.
Square pizzas. Pizza day was always something to look forward to.
For sure. That was where my brain went immediately. I also wanted to give a very honorable mention to Max Sticks. Did you ever have Max Sticks?
100% we did.
With the marinara that you like
dunk it in?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
We did, we would do popcorn shrimp. For lunches. That was always really good. Man, this is taking me back.
In high school, we had chicken haystack day, which was a bed of fries and then chicken fries, and then you could choose to have cheese sauce over the top of it. I skipped the cheese sauce just because it kind of ruined it for me. But that was, I don't know how that one got through because that one was far from healthy. But
yeah, it sounds
also
like it.
Very, very good. Then we also had Italian Dunkers.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
so good.
Which was just cheese toast with meat sauce on top of it.
Yep.
We also had Mr. Rib.
Mm-hmm.
Not McRib.
Nope.
But Mr. Rib, which I never got because I was. And here's every time my kids have these, it's instant nostalgia. If you didn't like Mr. Rib, like I didn't at the time, you always got a Uncrustable.
Yep. I was just going to bring that up. Like, you always had the option to slide in the Uncrustable substitute.
Yep.
And that was classic. That had to have been before the days where everybody had a peanut allergy that you had to, you know, not have peanuts on the school property in order to make sure that nobody died.
It's also weird to me that every single day I had milk. Like, every single day.
Yeah.
Like, and now I'm like, I probably have milk 2 to 3 times a week at the most.
Oh, dude, I have milk like 2 to 3 times a year.
Yeah.
I don't drink milk anymore. Maybe I should. I don't know. But yeah, we had milk every single day. Do you ever have that one kid that could not open those milk cartons to save his life? Every once in a while you would get one that like for some reason this one's defective and it won't let me open it.
And then you thought, get super frustrated. I'm gonna open the other side.
Yeah, and it wouldn't work.
No.
Oh, so frustrating.
So then you had the square. You just
you're just drinking out of the square because you had to open the whole thing.
And then it spilled. It was and then you'd have to use a spoon. When you have to get really desperate, you have to use a spoon to scoop it in. Gosh, school.
But
do you know
who didn't ever have that problem? Is the homeschool kids that just ate out of their own fridge.
Yeah. And that's what we're talking about today. Is we have an episode called Battle of the Schools.
100%.
We want to, realistically, you have one of three options, right? If you're going to send your kids to some kind of education, you really got three options. One is public school. In your community, in your town, whatever it is, you got public school. Second is private school. And I think for this particular audience, most private schools happen because they have a Christian basis, they have a Christian foundation, or your kid's just freakishly good at sports, and this sets them up for success long term.
Yeah, there's a school in Minnesota, Shattuck. And it is a high school entirely geared around hockey.
Yep.
Because we're Minnesota and that's how we do things. But you're right. There are schools. I mean, you know, you could go so far. Like IMG Academy down in Florida is another one. Montverde is. I don't know where Montverde is, but there are high schools that are specifically geared toward different
setting you up
sports.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, and I guess I'm just going to keep going through this list, but homeschool, would be the third bucket.
Yep.
You know what? Actually, when it comes to private school, the other category I would do is schedule, because there are schools where it's a private school, like you are going to school, but instead of, you know, you go to school Monday through Friday and then you could take the weekend off and then you do that for the school year and then you have summer off. Instead of that, it's like, hey, you're on school for like 6 weeks and then you're off for a week.
Yep.
And then 6 weeks on, 1 week off, or, you know, whatever the schedule is, but then it goes year round like that. There are some schools that that operate that way that are worth mentioning as well.
Yeah. And what we want to do for this episode is not say, you know, bucket one, two, or three is the better bucket. But I think where we have the luxury of being in youth ministry for how long we were, we kind of got to see the gamut of just general pros and cons of various, you know, choices there. And what I hope we don't do here is paint a stereotype for each of these three buckets, because, like, generally there are patterns, yes, but, like, at the same time, I can think of various students over my tenure that shattered that stereotype, you know, because it doesn't uniquely fit. But
I've met homeschool kids that are incredibly outgoing and have outstanding social skills. I've met homeschool kids that have terrible social skills. I've met, my wife went to the University of Minnesota and came out a Christian just fine.
Yep.
I went to a private university because I was going for a ministry degree. And
didn't come out just fine.
University of Minnesota doesn't have that. Yeah. Imagine that. The other thing that I think is worth prefacing, a couple things. The stereotypes one is good. Mm-hmm. Is good. Excuse me. This is a terrible idea to dump out all this candy on the desk while we're recording this show.
I think it's a great idea, though.
Also, for our listeners, Derek took a Three Musketeers. It says "You Rock" on it, and he took my pen and crossed out the word "rock" and put "suck." So it says "You suck," and then gave it to me. So my love tank is full this morning. Words of affirmation just shooting through the roof. When it comes to these are the three dominant buckets of schooling options. We're going to talk about them as a whole. They're not. There are other options that are going to get lumped into one of these three buckets. Like homeschooling can be done where, you know, say my wife and I are homeschooling our kids and you know, my wife is their quote unquote teacher and she does all the teaching. You could also have homeschool where it's entirely online. You can also have homeschool where there are co-ops involved, where, like, hey, one day a week we go to this co-op and do this, that, the other thing.
Private tutors, everything else.
Right. You know, when it comes to private schools, we kind of ran through. There's a lot of different ways that private schools can look. And public schools is probably the easiest cut and dry category, but we're going to lump different things together. And the reason for that is because we are going to be primarily having this conversation from a youth ministry perspective, from a spiritual perspective. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get into the pros and cons of the education that your students are receiving at these different institutions.
Great stipulation, yeah.
You know, we're not going to sit here and advocate like, hey, you should private school or homeschool your kids, because you never know what they're going to be taught in the public school system, and we have to, you know, prioritize Christian education. We're also not going to sit here and say, you know, you can't raise your kids in a bubble. You've got to get them in a public school because they need to be around unbelievers, because they'll be around unbelievers the rest of their life and they need to know how to evangelize. We're not going to do either of those things because both of those are really good arguments and you need to figure that out for yourself.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about, okay, your kid is in this setting. What does it look like from our perspective as the youth pastor?
Yep.
What does it look like from the perspective of spiritual growth?
Yeah, because I do feel as if when it comes to, you know, I've had it to where parents come to me and say, hey, I'm trying to figure out what to do with my kid, you know, because the thing that I hear over and over again is the world's become increasingly scary, you know, and there's just more and more stuff that I just don't feel comfortable with my kid. And that's a very valid reason, you know, like you and I both have young kids. We are not quite into the, I mean, my oldest is in his first year of preschool. So, I mean, we're dipping our toes into the water here, but I definitely understand that. And so I think what typically happens is while we have three buckets, it really kind of feels like two buckets are similar and one bucket's entirely different.
Yeah.
That being public school versus either homeschool or private education. And so Let's talk about, let's start with public school, okay? And let's start with some of the noticeable cons of sending your kid to public school. Yes, public school, it can be a...
Real quick, before we dive into this, I want to also preface that this was your path, correct?
Education? Yep, I was public school from kindergarten all the way through senior, and in the same school district the entire time, which I think also makes a difference.
Yep.
Yours was not, correct?
Right, we'll get to that.
Okay, yeah, so this was my path. So I just want to lay out kind of some pros and cons I have seen both from my personal experience and from my experience as a youth pastor, okay? And I'm going to start with cons because this is the one that everyone's thinking about right away. The reality is when you go to a public school, you are going to have your kids exposed to various things that are uncomfortable, okay? There's going to be... you know, every kid is different, right? The school bus can be a very toxic place for a lot of different capacities, right? Things are said, language is used that you don't typically use at home. Statistically speaking, this is not a great stat, but it is. Statistically speaking, it's one of the more common places kids are first introduced to pornography is on the school bus. Why? Because there's one adult on the bus who's driving the bus and everything that happens behind them, they cannot possibly monitor. So kids have their phones, they have access to things. That's where it happened. And if you're a parent, you're going, absolutely not. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. That's a noticeable con, right? Your kids are going to be exposed to things that you are not comfortable with. There is the educational piece, right? Like this has been something that I have, again, full exposure. I was a science major before I went to Bible college. So I took a lot of science heavy classes in high school. I took collegiate level biology my first year of college. Like I was well aware of how much they push things like global evolution, that we evolved from primates, you know, or we just can't, we are not created by God. We're created by, you know, just a series of random events, random chance, if you will. I was exposed to that, you know, and for a lot of people, that's a con, right? They don't want their kids to have to be force fed these different things. And I don't want to get into it right now, but there are other buzz topics that are becoming prevalent in the public school system that parents frankly just do not like. They are very uncomfortable with. And I'm not here to say whether yes or no you should do that. I'm just saying as a general rule of thumb, those are cons. If you go to a public school system, your kids are going to be exposed to things they have not yet been exposed to.
Well, and at the very least, you have less control over now in theory the school curriculum is largely dictated or at least somewhat dictated by the school board, which is made up of parents and, you know, like, so there's paths to have a say in what is taught in the public schools, but those paths are much easier in private schools and for sure obviously homeschooling. And so that's just that entire entire idea that you don't have control over, you have much less control over what is taught. So stuff might be taught that you don't want to be taught.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned the science aspect. Mm-hmm. I've got a youth student right now who is he's a senior, I believe. And he literally has a teacher that is like full on God's Not Dead 2. Mm-hmm. You know, classroom, like, you know, everybody's got to acknowledge Christianity is bogus, like whole thing.
Yeah.
And so he and I have had some great conversations about it, but it's a real thing. And so ideas that you don't agree with can be introduced, things that maybe you are okay with your child knowing, just not yet.
Yep.
You know, you're not in charge of the timeline either. And so, yeah, I agree. That can be difficult. What other negatives maybe are there when it comes to public schools?
Yeah, there. You know, we could sit here and nitpick, but I just want to kind of hit the bullet points. You know, as a general rule of thumb, public schools typically have larger numbers and less faculty. You know, the student to teacher ratio is typically much higher than private schools. Obviously, unless you have a lot of kids, odds are the ratio is going to be lower than if you're homeschooling your kids. So what happens when that ratio is larger, when there's more students and less teachers? Well, some more stuff gets missed. It's just a general rule of thumb, right? Like you typically see more bullying, more just kind of shady behavior in bathrooms or whatever else in public school. And all that stuff happens. I'm not going to deny it. I'm not going to say it's easy. I'm not even going to say it's not significant, because it is. I mean, there people get legitimately traumatized depending on their school context. And it's very, very difficult sometimes. So, you know, you have the exposure, you have the ratio. And I would just say as a just another just kind of overarching just blanket statement is there's just, you mentioned it, there's just less control. Mm-hmm. You have less of a say. Your voice is less heard sometimes, and not always, right? But a lot of times it very much feels like you need to fit into this system. And if you don't like it, then sorry about you, you know, as opposed to the other way. And so if you're a person who goes into this and struggles with that systematic, structured format, you're going to struggle.
Yeah, you can see, I've seen students where their learning style does not match up with the structure of the public school system. And so then their education immediately becomes a little bit more difficult, because the public school system's goal is, and this could actually go both ways. You know, the public school system is not built in pretty much any school district to cater to different learning styles. You know, somebody like, hey, like reading is really not my thing, but when I can get my hands on something, I can learn it very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a visual learner. Well, that's not how the system is built. And so then education becomes a little bit more difficult. On the other side, if unfortunately, the public education systems more often than not are tailored to cater, like they go at the speed of the bottom 25%. And so if you are incredibly gifted, you know, intellectually and in education endeavors, then the public school system can be a challenge there as well, mm-hmm. because you can't go at your own pace.
Yeah.
You can't go at the pace that maybe you know, that would challenge you.
At least not until high school. And that, I think that's what happens, is sometimes you have these kids that are super sharp.
Yeah.
But for the last 5-6 years, school is boring because they're on autopilot. So by the time they actually get into, you know, sophomore, junior, where they can start taking AP classes, college classes, upper level sciences, upper level math, they've lost all motivation because they've just checked out. And you know, I would say to cut up a bow on that thought, public school is catered to the masses. It's focused on getting as many kids through public education as possible, as efficient as possible. And so for the people that have learning disabilities, for the people that have social disabilities, people that have high levels of anxiety, high levels of, you know, all these different things, it's harder. And frankly, not that they don't have compassion, but they just have less compassion. Not because they're cold-hearted, not because they're bad people, just because when you have a school that has class sizes of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 800 people, you are talking about upwards of 2,000 to 3,000 students in your school district. And not that they don't care, but just because your son or daughter is one of 3,000, they're not going to be as patient, as compassionate to slow down and go at your pace. And rightfully so, like that's a problem, you know? So
yeah, we have, I'm trying to find one of the high schools that is a big one for us in our church, has I think just north of 3,000 students. And so, you know, do the math, that's like 750 kids per class. It's one of the biggest high schools in Minnesota. And that's, yeah, it's right around 3,000. And so that's exactly what Derek is saying, where the you're a number, and you know, they care about you to the extent of they want to see you through, they want you to graduate, they want you to learn stuff, but there's much less individuality when you get into a school of that size. Now, there's some more opportunities. You know, the bigger the school, usually the more electives that they have. you know, even the tiny school that I went to, tiny compared to this, you know, we had a sports officiating elective. Like, that was sweet. I loved that.
Totally.
We also didn't have, like, woodworking. And so, you know, there's trade-offs to, or home ec or auto mechanic class, you know, all these things. So every school is going to be a little different there.
Let me throw the pros out quick. So we'll do a comprehensive study of each of these buckets and then kind of tie it all together at the end. Like, as Kyle talked about, that is a pro, right? Like, that there's more students, there's more government funding in public schools than private schools. I think, I don't want to be uneducated in that, but basically there are just more opportunities for students who step into things that they like. Typically there's more extracurriculars as well. You know, there's bigger teams, bigger opportunities, all those kinds of things. Another thing that I truly love, and this has been a topic of conversation for my wife and I, because it was both of our experience, exposure is both a negative and a positive, okay? Like, you are going to have kids, my kids are going to be exposed to things I don't want them to be exposed to yet. But at the same time, I want them to see these things and understand this is the real world, right? Like, my kids are pastor's kids. They are going to grow up in the church. I want them to understand that what happens in the church doesn't always translate into outside of the church, you know, and I want them to see that and experience that while they're still in my home. You know, I don't want them to experience that, me personally, when they are 19, 20 years old and their whole world gets rocked and now mom and dad aren't here to kind of encourage, empower, and lift up, you know. And so that is a pro, right? Like, I know it's a negative, I mentioned that in the con, but it also is a pro that you just kind of get to be in the real world and you get to see a different thing. And I would also say you do get to, like, choose your faith, you know? Like, Kyle and I both went to a biblical college. There's kind of the understanding that everybody believes here for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, that was awesome. But the year before that, I was at a state university. And let me tell you one thing, not everybody had a faith there. And I had to choose it over and over and over again. And that was one of the, like, seasons of my life where my faith was the most intentional it's ever been. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think you have that same thing in high school. I mean, imagine your student who is sitting in class knowing how much he loves Jesus, and he's having an authority figure slammed on his throat that, no, it's not. Yet now he's sitting there and he's, that opposition, that resistance is sharpening his faith. It's strengthening him. And that can be a pro as well. And so, you know, I do think there's something to be said about just being exposed as a negative and a positive. And, you know, frankly, I think that's really where there are pros to going to public school as well.
Yeah, I think that just iron sharpens iron can almost be used for both public school and non-public school, because when you're around other people that believe the same thing you do, it can spur you on to dive a little bit deeper. At the same time, when you're around people that don't believe what you believe, it forces you to, you know, be more firm in your convictions about what you believe, and it forces you to answer questions that you may not have thought of. And so, you know, some of, like, we've had phenomenal students come through our youth ministry that have been a part of public schools and have been really, really key students in our youth ministry over the years. I think that, you know, I think the misconception in American churches is that the schools are the ones primarily responsible for educating your child, and the church is primarily responsible for the spiritual growth of your child. When in fact, both of those things, you as the parent are the primary person responsible for them. I think the church and, you know, spiritual growth and education really fall similarly on this line. We've kind of tried to, a lot of people try to just pass that off to the schools. And so if you take a little bit more of an interest and a little bit more stock in your child's education, if they go to a public school, but you're involved just a little bit more to, like, hey, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure you can get the you know, broad curriculums of pretty much any grade, any class in a public school sent to you ahead of time.
I'm sure.
And so then you can, like, okay, this week is when they're going to be talking about this. I'm going to preface with my kid, here's what you're going to learn this week. Here, and you don't have to do that with everything. Like, your kid is going to learn about photosynthesis this week. I don't feel like I need to preface that with my Christian take on photosynthesis. But when it comes to, you know, some of the stuff that isn't on the timeline you want it to be on, or it's not on, you know, it's a different teaching altogether, you've got the option to, like, hey, I'm just not going to send my kid to school that day, or we're going to have a conversation ahead of time because I am taking a vested interest in the education right. of my child.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think what this episode's already doing is just, it's showing you that there is no necessarily wrong answer. Like, there of these three buckets that we're not going to sit here and say there, this one is clearly superior. It is so student to student and case by case. And, you know, it's one of those things where maybe, like, with where we're sitting at right now, you could have realistically three public school options to go to, correct? Like, mm-hmm. let's say school A is a problem for your student, but you don't have the capacity or the finances to send. And that's probably another pro. It's
free.
It's free. You know, and
yep,
like,
that's worth mentioning.
And it's one of those things that maybe you can't, they don't fit in at school A, but school B does, you know, and doing that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, like, I grew up in public school, the same public school. You know, I got a really good education. My faith, like, did grow throughout my high school career. I still made mistakes. I still mm-hmm. did things I'm not proud of. I was a teenager, all those kind of things. But I definitely, as a general rule of thumb, when I was in ministry, primarily youth ministry, a bulk of our students were in this camp. They were public school kids, and I stand behind every single thing I've experienced personally, and I've seen that in them. And let me just kind of end with this in terms of public school. Going to public school and having a strong faith do not have to be mutually exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
They can coexist at the same time. And I just think that it's harder, but it's also beneficial. And I just want to kind of say that if you are sending your kid to public school, you're not a bad parent. You're not sending them to death. Like, you are, it is possible with the right parameters, with the right intentionality, for them to thrive in public school and thrive in their faith.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so transitioning to the private school conversation, and I think it's worth mentioning, according to the 2021 U.S. Census of school enrollment. I'm seeing different statistics everywhere, but roughly 10% of students are enrolled in America in private education.
Say that. What was the number?
Roughly 10%.
Okay.
And then it's like 4% are homeschooled, 8 to 12% are private school. That leaves
80-ish,
85-ish% for public school. So just so that you have a raw bird's eye view of the numbers. But so when it comes to private school, it can be kind of a catch-all a little bit. You know, like we mentioned, a traditional, like, our church is almost right across the street from a private Christian school. It's exactly what you think of when you think of a private Christian education. You know, it's a private Christian school, costs a whole bunch of money. you also have, you know, I believe Montessori schools are the ones where, like, the schedule is just a little bit different. The school that I would say falls in the middle of private and public would be charter schools. And I think it's worth mentioning, because the last time I did the math, I think it was like 65 to 70% of the youth students in my own youth ministry attend the charter school in our area. And for those unfamiliar, essentially what a charter school is it is a public school. You know, they receive funding from the government. It's a public school, but it is essentially commissioned with a specific niche purpose. And so this particular particular charter school, their whole shtick is that the parents are very involved in a lot of the process. The parent board has a big say in everything at the school. You know, there's like they have, I don't know how well this system actually works, but the students that go there, their parents each semester have like a certain number of volunteer hours that they have to do. Which is kind of interesting, yeah. You know, and that's like, you know, running the clock at a basketball game or running concessions or helping out with the school's track and field day, helping out with field trips, a whole bunch of stuff like that, selling tickets for the concert, whatever it is. They basically have mandatory, and again, I don't know how, like, I don't think it's really mandatory. I don't know what happens if you don't do it, but you're supposed to help out as a parent with a bunch of the stuff around the school. So that's like kind of their thing. There are plenty of other avenues a charter school can go. But the reason that I bring it up is because, and before we dive into some of the specifics of private schools, and the reason that I have charter schools in the private school bucket is because most charter schools, from a youth pastor perspective, and I think from a parent and education perspective, most charter schools are going to operate as private schools. Most of them are going to, like for me, with this specific charter school, I treat it as a private school. I look at these students as though they're receiving a private education.
Yep.
The school cannot, they're publicly funded. The school cannot like come out and be like, hey, we're going to teach this religion course. But it is heavily Christian influenced because many, many, many parents that are highly involved with the school are Christians. And so there's a lot of Christian themes to the school, even if they're not overtly talking about it.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff that we will get into with the pros and cons of private schools, they're similar with charter schools as well.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, because you grew up in that kind of a context, correct?
Yeah. So I went to a private Catholic school. I'm not Catholic, but I went to the private Catholic school, which was honestly a fun and interesting experience spiritually. It was a great education. And so my sister's 2 years older than me. When she was going into kindergarten, the public school system in the city we grew up in was not in a great spot. And so that's why my parents were like, we're not Catholic, but we'll put you in that education system anyway, because it's a good education system. And they also, if I've heard the story right, my dad actually joined the local Catholic church and gave a very small tithe each month to the Catholic church, because if you were a member and if you tithed, then you got a very significant discount on your tuition for the private school.
Nice.
And it was like much bigger the discount than the mandatory minimum tithe amount. And so he was like, economics, let's do it. And he grew up Catholic, so he had the background anyway. But it was a fun little, I found that out. I was like, hey, well done. So I went to a Catholic school. It was, you know, there were like four Catholic grade schools, K through eight, in our city that blended into, they all fed into one Catholic high school. So I was K through 12 in the Catholic school system.
Pros and cons?
Pros? Nah, it's more fun to start with the cons. one of the most obvious cons for me was, you know, my family's not Catholic, but I'm in the Catholic school.
Sure.
And so even getting a private Christian education, there were differences in belief that, you know, we would talk about at home. Like, hey, I was in this religion class that I'm taking and they taught this, but at church, I'm getting this.
Yep.
Like, let's talk about the differences. And there are enough differences across denominations in Christianity where that's probably going to happen to some degree.
No question.
At a private Christian school. We talked about, you know, kind of the antithesis of the public schools. You know, most private schools are smaller. I mentioned that public school in our area is 3,000 students. My four-year high school, it was under 500 students total. My graduating class was 121. Yeah. And so less opportunity for things like extracurriculars.
Sure.
You could argue there's more opportunity, kind of, for athletics, because you go to a big, big public school, you might start as a junior on the football team if you're good enough. But most of the time, you're starting as a senior, and that's the only year that you're starting in your sport. You're playing JV, you're playing freshman, all that. You go to a smaller school, you can play multiple years of varsity. But it's also a lower level of competition and stuff like that. Across the board, because like the education tends to be graded a little bit better at private schools, charter schools, because the class sizes and the staff to student ratio tends to be a little bit better.
Yep.
Than public schools. I don't know what else. I mean, a lot of this is going to be the antithesis of the public school conversation, where you know, in a public school setting, you are rubbing shoulders with people of other beliefs. In a private school setting, you're rubbing shoulders with people of the same beliefs. So you might be encouraged and spurred on to go deeper, but at the same time, you are not rubbing shoulders with people of different beliefs. And so there's angles you're not seeing. There's evangelism that you're probably not doing.
Yep.
It's much harder to evangelize to somebody who's already Christian. And so, you know, there's that difficulty as well.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what's so hard is like, it's, excuse me. And this is why people pick one over the other, because it really is, like you said, the antithesis. Like, if you really don't want your kids to be exposed to anything, then like, it's a pretty easy decision to go private, you know, or vice versa. And it is one of those things. I think that, honestly, I don't have a whole lot more to share. I mean, the cost piece is another thing. Like, I think that probably is the biggest piece that I think, if push came to shove, a lot more people would probably go private if it didn't cost so much money, you know? Because like, that is, I don't want to say like a weed out, but I would almost venture that's why private schools are the way that they are. Is they want to keep things a certain way, and they know that one way to do that is economics, you know, and to keep things small, intimate.
Well, and there's a practical side to it as well, because when you are a truly private school, you're not getting the government funding that a public school is, and so you have to get your money from somewhere. And tuition and donors are the two ways primarily to do that. So you have to do that in order to function as a school. I actually talked to a parent of the Christian school in our area a couple weeks ago, and he talked about how, you know, there's two kinds of families at a private Christian school. You know, the first type is the family that says, hey, this is going to be a stretch and a sacrifice for us financially, but we're going to do it because we want to make the investment in our kids' education in this way. And he was like, that's the category I fall in. The other category of parents are, this guy I was talking to is a construction guy, you know, kind of just finds odd jobs wherever he can. He said several parents have approached me about hiring me to put golf simulators in a room in their house. That's the other kind of parent of a private Christian school, where it's like, yeah, this is a budget line item for them, but it doesn't hurt them financially to make that tuition payment. And so that was where I thought it was really interesting. But that, you're right, that financial peace is something that's definitely worth bringing up.
And with that too, I think it's at least worth acknowledging. I want to be very careful how I say this, because I'm not saying I stand by this.
This should be good.
This is just what I have heard from people who have walked through it. There are various personalities and stigmas that carry people who put their kids in private school. I have had people send their kid to a private school, and they just feel like it is, you know, here in Minnesota, there's 14 some thousand lakes in this entire state. But there is one lake that all the big shots go to here in Minnesota.
Lake Minnetonka.
And it truly is who can build the biggest, most expensive mansion, you know?
Or have the biggest boat.
Yeah. And it really is just a, let's see who's the wealthier individual. And by no means am I saying that happens at every school, but I have had parents send their kid to a private school for a year or two and say, I couldn't do it anymore. It just felt like everything was keeping up with the Joneses, and I couldn't do it anymore, you know?
Yeah, I'll say I feel like we don't really need to get into the pros of the private schools, because they're the opposite of the public schools. Like,
yes.
You know, the pros and cons of the homeschooling will be a little bit more of an interesting conversation. Like, this is just kind of the other side of the spectrum for the public school conversation. But one of the things that I think is worth mentioning, and you're kind of hitting on it here, from my experience in a private school and my experience where a lot of our students go to this charter quasi-private school right now, parents can sometimes... I see too many parents fall into the trap of, if I send my kid to the private school, then they won't sin and they'll come out a perfect Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And like I mentioned, looking back over the years, some of my favorite, most dedicated students to their faith and like rock stars in their faith, like some of the highest ones on the list came from the public school system. Some of the students that have absolutely frustrated me the most have come from private schools and charter schools. And it goes the other way as well, but in my experience, sometimes private school kids, they know the expectations that are on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they attempt disobedience, a lot of times they tend to be a little bit craftier with it, because they know what the expectations are. They know what their parents want. And so when they're going to go the opposite way, it's not just like a lot of times in a public school, I would almost say that if I were to sum it up, the sin in public schools tends to be a little bit more upfront. The sin in private schools tends to be a little bit more in the heart.
Oh.
And this is a generalization,
yep.
But it can be just as much, if not more, of a problem. And something that takes careful navigation on the part of parents. And I say that purposefully.
Mm-hmm.
It does not take careful navigation on the part of the youth pastor, because they're not the one raising your kids.
Yeah. It also, why do you go on mission teams? Since your question. Why do you go on mission teams?
I love mission teams because I love serving people outside of our comfort zone, and I love what God does in our heart when we are there when we are dedicated to God for a long period of time. And oftentimes getting students outside of their comfort zone allows them to see a different perspective.
Yeah. And I think that is where I'm all for private school. As a matter of fact, like, I know many people in my church who do it. Like, I'm not sitting here saying that's a bad decision. I actually think it's a great decision. I'm just saying, if you don't couple that with getting them uncomfortable, it's hard. Because I agree with you. Some of the hardest, like when we talk about missions or serving others or giving, you know, giving to those who are less fortunate, the ones that jump into this one are the ones who have experienced what that feels like. The ones who haven't, the ones who have grown up in church their whole life, the ones that were, you know, just maybe in this culture where they're surrounded by believers, which is an incredible thing. Let me just paint positive quick. Like, when your kids know the scripture and they know church, and they, like, those are great things. And like, that's, I know that's where the motivation comes from. I'm just saying, when you don't see with your own eyes the poverty, spiritual or financial, like, you're not as compulsed to move. Like, how many times you come back from mission team, you're like, I literally, like, I need to do something. Like, I can't sit here in my lush house. And trust me, I'm a pastor. I don't have a lush house. But compared to building a house for somebody,
right,
when there are toilets in the ground,
yep,
and their house is built out of banana boxes and tarps, you realize, holy buckets, I'm blessed beyond measure. You know, it pulls me to doing something powerful, you know? And so I'm just sitting here saying, like, you really should kind of jump into getting uncomfortable if you're in that private school system.
Here's a fun little fact for us. There are, if I'm reading these numbers correctly, in 2021, there were 1.9 million students in private schools in America. There were 2.5 million students in poverty in America. And this is, these are just high school students for both of those statistics. And so that's where, that's something that, and the poverty one, the poverty number is higher across every single category, you know, pre-K through high school. And, you know, that kind of goes toward, like, we're not saying the solution is pull your kids out of private school, put them in public school,
right,
and then take
not.
The money you were paying in tuition and, you know, pay for, you know, your neighbor's groceries.
Yeah.
But there are, I think if you're saying, hey, you know, the right choice for our family is this private Christian education. Cool. Find intentional ways. Cause we're making the assumption that if you're privately educating your children with a Christian education, and if you're listening to this podcast and doing that, you're probably also plugged into your local church and your kids are going to church on Sundays. Maybe they're involved on Wednesday nights, whatever. That's a lot of Christian bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to find, and my point is it doesn't have to be missions overseas. That's a great thing to do when they're old enough, or something that you guys can do as a family, but also having ways where, like, hey, we're going to go serve at Feed My Starving Children. We're going to go find a homeless shelter and help out serving a meal there once a month.
You can run the concession stand at your neighborhood football game.
Sure.
It can be, like, anything.
Yeah, find the local youth football association and, you know, go run the registration table for them. Go run the concession stand for them at their games on Saturday mornings. Whatever it is, find ways to get into your community and outside of that Christian bubble. I think that's probably the biggest potential con of private education is isolation to the point where it's dangerous.
Which is exactly what the big caveat is for homeschooling, which is our last one.
Yeah.
You know, and homeschooling, you know, not that we're trying to skimp on these, but just, again, you can copy and paste pros and cons and see this is the other half of the coin for this. But, like, homeschooling to me, Kyle, is the isolation piece is probably the biggest noticeable con, you know, to where there is something to be said about emotional and physical intelligence and then social intelligence. That's just the thing. I mean, there's a part of the development process where kids need to be able to interact with other people. And what I love is I've gotten a front row seat to some people that I really love and respect who they homeschool their kids. So their kids, I'll tell you, they're a half a year ahead. I mean, they are doing junior level things at the end of their sophomore year. They, you know, so they are very, very intellectually smart. But the parents, knowing this very paradigm, have been intentional about, you need to go to youth group every single Wednesday to be around other kids and, you know, grow in your faith, which is all great. But here's what I also love. They said, pick a sport, pick theater. I don't care. But you will be doing extracurriculars at the school district so you can get exposed to other kids and interact with other kids and make friends, you know?
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. And oftentimes, you know, when you homeschool, your extracurriculars get tied into just whichever school district you are in. Mm-hmm. You don't, like, get to choose, like, hey, I want to do the extracurriculars over there. Well, you don't go to school anywhere, you know, as far as the public education system is concerned. So you're just doing extracurriculars wherever you get assigned because of where you live.
Yep.
But they do... Like that's where co-ops have become a really, really big thing as well, where, like, hey, we homeschool our kids, whether it's, you know, us intentionally or it's like an online program, whatever. But then there's these co-ops where once a week we go to the co-op and other homeschool families come together and we've got classes we do, we've got trips we take, whatever it is, those social experiences. I love the idea of... you know, where, like, youth group is basically mandatory. I love the idea that some sort of extracurricular is basically mandatory. Just that helps with that isolation. It helps with getting outside of that bubble. It helps with social development. you know, that we as youth pastors saw going through COVID that only staying at home was terrible for the forget education, forget spiritual development, the social development of our students took a step backwards noticeably.
Yeah. Yep.
In less than 6 months, right, for some districts.
Yep.
And so that's where I think we absolutely, you have to be, that's maybe the summary of all three of these education options. You as parents have to be intentional about manning the gap in whatever choice you make.
So good.
With these decisions. If you're choosing, and none of these are the wrong decision in and of themselves. If you're going to choose the public education system, you've got to man the gap a little bit when it comes to the spiritual oversight of that mm-hmm. education. If you're going to choose the private education, you have to man the gap a little bit about
exposure
to different worldview. Because like, I've seen kids go through private education and then they get out in the real world, it smacks them in the head and they lose their faith because they have never encountered anything close to what the real world actually is.
Totally.
And that's not good for your kid. Mm-hmm. And so intentionally doing that. And then if you're gonna homeschool, cool. Like, you've got to intentionally put your kids in those social situations. You've got to intentionally introduce different viewpoints outside of just your own or just what the curriculum says, so that they develop some of those critical thinking skills.
Yeah. You mentioned something earlier, and I think it's the best way to just summarize this episode is, again, I don't want to be naive here because you and I are both very early to the game, but I am already seeing that, like, being a parent is no joke. I mean, it takes sacrifice. It takes work. It's incredibly rewarding, incredibly awesome. It's also incredibly challenging, you know? And I think that so many times we look for that magic bullet to help put our kids on the right trajectory.
Yeah.
If I just send them to this school, they will make good friends. They will grow in their faith. They will never struggle. They will get out of this, and then they can get out of this system and they will be perfect for the rest of their life. It's not going to happen. Like, I'm sorry. They are going to struggle. It is part of the formula for thriving in this real world and, frankly, walking out your faith. And so I think that, as we've said so many times, you pick a bucket. They're all good. They've all got their strengths. They've all got their pros. They've all got their cons. But what makes your kid thrive in and out of the classroom is less to do about where they're sitting and far more like what they're coming home to mm-hmm. and what your involvement is in their life. Because if you are pouring into them outside of business hours, they're going to thrive. Yeah. And if they know you love them, they know you hear them, they know that you are emotionally, physically, financially invested into their life and their well-being, they are naturally going to respond well to you and respond to whatever environment they are in.
Yeah, the other real quick thing that I'm going to mention on the homeschooling front, we mentioned with public schools that if there are learning disabilities, learning differences, that's the least tolerable environment for stuff like that. Homeschooling would be the most tolerable environment. Whether it's I want to speed up or I want to slow down or I just learn differently, whatever it is, homeschool is going to be a little bit more, a little bit better suited for mm-hmm. stuff like that. And so that can be a really good pro for homeschool too. Just wanted to mention that.
Totally.
Sweet. That does it for today's episode. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Like we mentioned last week, tune in next time to hear our live recording that we did with my own youth students. It was a really, really fun time. Derek and I had a great time answering all their questions. So make sure you tune in next week for that. But until then, Derek, I think it's about time I go interview every single teacher in every school district in the area to figure out where to send my daughter for preschool. Goodbye.